If you missed it live, catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.
You know, the return of TikTok, and I think it is a very interesting litmus test for exactly what Mamoketi Lijani was just telling us. Donald Trump is the person who actually brought to the attention of the Supreme Court of the United States to TikTok being a potential risk to national security because of the Chinese ownership, although that may not have been the full reason that he did so. And then took a couple of steps back when he saw that he got a great deal of support from Pod Bros and other TikTok followers and a Gen Z followership. And now, as you would have seen, TikTok was dark in the United States for all of 24 hours in the United States. It didn't even have to be turned off. They turned it off willingly. And if you've seen some of the notices that have gone around, the notice went from, we are very sorry, but TikTok is off in your country because of some legal changes in the United States. And 20 minutes later to TikTok is off in your country. But thanks to President Donald J. Trump, we will probably find a way forward. And that just shows you how he is able to find that middle that Mamoketi was indicating, particularly once he sees what the bottom line might look like. But maybe we can hold on to that as a bit of a hope, albeit he's quite an unpredictable president. Speaking of things that are not very predictable, the last couple of weeks, months even, for those who have been underground, have been a point of massive news coverage, in particular with regards to the Stilfontein mine in the Free State. And we're not going to be speaking about that. I think we've spoken about that ad nauseum. You would have heard the discussion on Drive. And check out the podcast because it was a very interesting one. But the issue from a Kaya Biz perspective that I really wanted to explore is I think that most of our media, the public discourse, even what we're hearing from the South African Human Rights Commission and the like, and even the police and government, is quite focused on these particular individuals underground in a space of the country where, in many respects, unemployment is greater in percentage than employment is. And so I imagine choices are quite limited. But there are some requirements and responsibilities of the government, of business, of environmental practitioners, if and when one wants to pursue mining. And my next guest, I think, is a really great mind to help us get our thoughts around this in a more holistic way. Peter Major is Director of Mining at Modern Corporate Solutions and is joining us today to help us understand when we speak about the number of abandoned mines in South Africa. And I remember we've been mining gold since the 1800s. It becomes it's not that the mine gets empty when a company stops mining there. It usually just turns out that the cost curve gets too high. It becomes too expensive in comparison to what they can earn per ounce of gold extracted in the official way. And it unfortunately opens up this unintended consequence. And the question that I'm asking of Peter this evening is, what is supposed to be done before mining, during mining, after mining, by whom? Welcome to Kaya Biz, Peter Major. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Rafiwi.
All righty. So I'm sure you've been seeing what's happening on the news in South Africa, but these rules and legislations and requirements and expectations, I imagine, differ from country to country. Help us understand what happens, what are the requirements ethically or legally and environmentally of a mine operator during and after prospecting and when mining is decided to happen in order to get a license?
They are enormous. It's probably fair to say mining has more responsibility to return the land that it's based on to its original or better state than probably any other business. You know, maybe if you're erecting a chemical factory or a Sasol. But the guidelines here are very well, what should I say, thought out. Yeah, they are pretty well thought out.
And explicit.
And they're elucidated.
Right. Okay, so help us understand. What are some of the, because if I know from an asset management perspective, there are plenty of rehabilitation funds around. I'm not sure, does every single mining company have to create one?
Yes, they are. You don't get a prospecting license without having a rehabilitation plan, and it's got to be approved by the Department of Mines, and you have to put in enough money that if you don't do a proper job, that they can use your money to do a proper job. So they have to do quite a thorough investigation of what you plan on doing, and then they have to monitor you because, as we know, some people go out and do something else. Some people plant,
and a lot of times they do much less than planned, but sometimes they do more. And so it's got to be a constant monitoring process. You don't say, okay, I'm going by your plan here. You're going to put in $1 million and then you never go and follow through. Quarterly reports have to be submitted and pretty much followed through. The DMR follows your report in person on the mine to see that you're doing exactly what you said.
Right.
Or that you have more than enough money to cover what you've done so far.
Peter, your sound went a little bit echoey in the middle of your statement, but so if you mind, wouldn't
did
mind
I
help?
Lose everybody?
No, we're still here, just a little bit more echoey. We're trying to adjust the balance on this side as well. But just talk to me, what is your sense of South Africa's government, the DMR's...
I'll log out and I'll log in again.
No, that's all right. It's not that bad. It's not that bad. You're still clear. It's just a little tinny.
Hello?
Hi, I hear you. We hear you clearly. Don't worry. So, Peter, what
I'm
is your...
I'm afraid I can't hear anything on my side.
Okay. We'll speak to you shortly. Thank you, Peter, so much. Please do log out and back in. That's Peter Major. We'll continue the conversation shortly. It's 6:46. What we're discussing today is mine rehabilitation, in particular the responsibilities of the prospector and the mining company, of government, of course, also of the community. Right. So what we're talking about when we look at these kinds of, as he says, very highly elucidated, very explicit and very burdensome requirements is not just that you dig, get your gold and disappear. You need to obviously have an environmental impact report. You need to ensure that you're not going to cause water contamination, air pollution, land degradation. And of course, you mustn't cause significant risks to the community and the ecosystem around which you happen to operate. One of the terms that is often raised when we hear about the Stilfontein mine story, for example, is the term blockaded, the blockaded mine, the defunct mine. And my question is, was this mine rehabilitated? I'm not sure if Peter is willing or in a position to answer that, but more importantly, in anticipation of more of these zama-zama stories, I'd like to get a sense from Peter of his thinking of South Africa's success at monitoring this. Welcome back, Peter. Thank you so much for that. Yes, we are having a conversation with Peter Major. He's a director of mining at Modern Corporate Solutions. And this is our third time, I'm certain will be the charm. Our technical gremlins have gotten in the way. But if you have been under a rock, well, no, that's not a nice pun. But if you've missed it, South Africa is obviously facing a horrible tragedy in the Stilfontein mine and the potential for this to extend itself to other mines, with the police attention being on this particular one and the apprehension of a couple of kingpins in what must be a major syndicate. So Peter is here to help us understand a bit more about the roles and responsibility of the previous own miner. Originally Buffelsfontein and gold mine, but that's not really the issue here. We want to speak from a broader perspective. Welcome back, Peter.
Let's hope
excellent.
President Trump didn't turn off Zoom so that he could turn back on TikTok.
I know. I saw a meme that said the app we wanted blocked was Teams. But anyways, Peter, talk to me about your assessment of South Africa's success at monitoring these mines. You made a very interesting point earlier on about it's not just about the company that must rehabilitate, but of course the country. There's a legislative mandate from the Department of Mineral Resources that it must obviously on a quarterly basis, as you said, ensure that these companies are compliant. How good have we been at this?
We're very bad at it. Unfortunately, it's a huge administrative task. And we know government is not very good at administrative, especially the last 20 years. And because the MPRDA was a totally brand new Mineral and Resource Development Act, there was so much new in there, and there were so many bolt-on accessories that have just made it more and more difficult. So you needed huge administration. And I think the founders, the creators of this MPRDA, were really out of their depth. And they didn't realize what we've done here is going to require multiples of the monitoring that we needed before. Yeah. And we don't have the staff. You know, we got brand new staff. We got inexperienced staff. Unfortunately, we know the hard way there's a lot of corrupt staff there. Mm-hmm. And where there's chaos, there's opportunity. And boy, there was chaos. because they also nationalized our mines at the same time, gave a new NPRDA, and then came out with some new invention called BEE scorecards. And then, there's other bells and whistles that topped it off. So the administrative requirements were mind-boggling. I don't know if even Singapore or Finland or Sweden, you know, someone who's good at admin, I don't even know if they could have done the monitoring and following through. And so all kinds of problems have occurred. All kinds of things have fallen between the cracks. Mm. And yes, a lot of mines were abandoned illegally. The owners disappeared, or they did a rush job selling it to somebody else. It just opened a Pandora's box. Well, that's what we've got now.
I am glad that you mentioned Finland and Singapore. Is there anywhere in the world that is effectively a model that we could follow, or is this quite commonplace?
Yeah, there are models. I can think of the ones I've seen in the United States. And South Africa has followed a similar path to most countries that did mining. There were no rules when it started back in 1860, 1870. The rules came few and far between. They weren't followed through. They weren't administered correctly. And so everybody has gone through this curve. It's not just us. Mm. But I think we went through it. Unfortunately, we kind of went backwards. We were getting better and better, like the rest of the world did. But we did such a big sea change here in 2004 that I worry it panicked a lot of people. It closed a lot of mines unnecessarily. It led to people scurrying away from the country, away from the mines unnecessarily. There was a commodity boom in progress. People didn't realize that at the time. But it drove away so much investment, locally and foreign, that it's like too many people abandoning ship all at the same time. Well, it was really panic mode.
The next question I have, I mean, I hear you talking about scurrying away when the administrative burden is high and maybe the administrative cost is high. But my long-term concern here is that there is a great deal of attraction. As you said, where there's chaos, there's opportunity. There seems to be a great deal of concern, I have concern, and there's a great deal of attraction to what we call in South Africa Zama Zama mining, and what in DRC is called artisanal mining, but in either respect is inappropriate. There's massive international investment into what's happening in the DRC for cobalt and lithium. And also, you know, these unsafe conditions, hand-driven and sometimes very irregular hierarchies of control. And my concern personally is that there is, maybe not international, I don't know, but certainly it can only be a large-scale operation that can support thousands of miners, for example, in the Stilfontein mine or any other opportunity that may come up. And the risk here, of course, is in what is called an abandoned or blockaded or defunct mine. I think I read there's still 11.02 million ounces of reserves in this particular one, for example. And if one is happy to get it out by cutting corners, how can we prevent this happening at another site?
Well, boy, I think you should be lecturing Parliament. It's everything you said that I've heard now is 100% correct. So wherever you're getting your information, according to me, they're very good sources. You're so right. This was a fallacy that we're chipping the Minerals Act to allow small-scale miners. That was nonsense, and that was a smoke screen. And it covered up all kinds of dubious bad intentions. Mining is like putting people in space. It's just an industry that a small guy shouldn't be in. Probably like trying an automotive plant.
Sure.
You know, if you want to build cars now, the legal safety and health regulations, pollution regulations. So either our politicians were lying, or they were naive, or they were trying to cover something up.
Well, but they were hoodwinked. Were they mining experts? I don't, you know, these are all things I'm asking.
They had 800,000 men in mining, and now we have 450,000. So what did they open up? They opened up chaos. They opened up opportunity for syndicates and zama-zamas that weren't there before. There's always been a few illegal miners, and there's always been theft gangs on the mines. And it took the combined effort of the police, the Justice Department, the Army, mine security, the local community. It took everybody to kind of keep it under control. But all that was opened up. It's like the fall of the Iron Curtain. So by 2004, the floodgates were open. Yes, mining is for big people because they need big money to do this safely and to do it, what do we call it, sustainably, and to rehabilitate it correctly. So out of those 6,000 abandoned mines, shafts, and tunnels, very few of them have a final closure certificate. Very few of them are left in the state that they should have been left in. And we can try and track down the owners of those, but some of those owners are going to turn out to be government. And we know government doesn't have the funds or expertise to rehabilitate. Mm-hmm. The existing companies do, but you don't want to make it too hard on them, too unreasonable on them, or they will just disappear in the night. I think the big companies here are pretty well equipped and have been setting a good example.
I have a final question for you, Peter, because there is a baby passing situation happening in what is at once an environmental, mechanical, humanitarian, and criminal emergency. And that is this a rescue? Is this a mineral project that requires engineering skill? Is this... you know what I'm saying? I'm not asking about who the buck stops with, but who should start?
Who should government on
Stilfontein? And if ever this happens again, even before it gets to this tragic point, do we start with policing or do we start with going in and trying to rehabilitate? What's your thought?
I think the best way to attack this problem is make mining so attractive that people want to put money here like they did a long time ago. Because if they put money here, we can monitor them and they will feel they own the resource and they'll do it under the limelight and they'll do it correctly. But if we don't get money coming in here, we have no chance in hell of rehabilitating 10% of these mines because the government doesn't have the money and the few companies still mining don't have the money. So we've got to look at the Mineral Act and say, does this attract investment or does it drive it away? Because the last 20 years, it's just driven it away. We need a lot of money coming in this country to help fix up these mines and to re-exploit the ore bodies that you mentioned. Yes, Harvey Shafts, Buffelsfontein, 11 million ounces sitting there at the highest metal price ever. Yeah. That thing could have gone on for another 50, 70 years with appropriate legislation.
A lot to consider. Our only problem in that, I'll buy you a coffee because we're out of time. But my next problem is that we've got deep mines and a lot of people say that the cost curve is too high, but we'll talk more about that another day. Appreciated your insight, Peter Major, Director of Mining at Modern Corporate Solutions, helping us understand the process, the responsibility, and the sheer weight and magnitude of running a mine and certainly the mine rehabilitation that is required in order to ensure it's sustainable for South Africans.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.